This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, what the Soviet Union thinks about the U.S. elections. Tonight's guest, in Moscow, political commentator Spartak Beglov of the unofficial Russian news agency, Novosti Press. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. Tonight we welcome three news stations to the Night Call Network. Radio stations KCSJ in Pueblo, Colorado, and KVBR in Bernard, Minnesota, plus KGAK in Gallup, New Mexico. We welcome these stations to the Night Call Network. Tonight we are hoping that we can continue our international phone calls. A few weeks ago we had the delightful pleasure of talking to movie director and producer Mr. Jules Dassin in Paris, France. And tonight we have our phone call set up to receive Mr. Spartak Beglov from Moscow in the hopes that in this history-making effort toward international friendship that we might be able to explore some of the areas in East-West relations. Hello, Mr. Beglov. Our first question, sir. Do you expect that the presidency, the president-elect, Mr. Nixon, will bring about any changes in relations between the Soviet Union and America?
Will this change mean the discarding of the old and adjusting the American foreign policy to the conditions and demands of the new, what we call a revolutionary epoch. Or this change would be quantitative one, more of the same thing. These are the questions which are in our mind.
Mr. Beglov?
Yes?
Just hold for just about 1 minute and we'll come right back.
Yes.
Thank you very much, sir. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
Deals and guest Spartak Beglov in Moscow after station identification. Next week on Night Call, a new left American revolutionary, a crime psychiatrist, a spokesman for the homosexuals of America, the black co-star of Mission Impossible, and a black television correspondent. Monday, co-founder Tom Hayden of the Students for a Democratic Society. Tuesday, Dr. James Brussell, the crime psychiatrist who helped solve the mysteries of the Mad Bomber, the Wiley murders, the Boston Strangler, and the Coppolino case. Wednesday, a mystery member of the Mattachine Society, an organization of American homosexuals. Thursday, actor Greg Morris of Mission Impossible. And Friday, Bob Teague of NBC News. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to political commentator Spartak Beglov of the Russian Novosti Press Agency in Moscow about Soviet reaction to the American elections. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And a welcome to the Night Call stations who join us nightly for the second half hour. We are delighted tonight because we were able to make contact with our guest, Mr. Spartak Beglov of the Russian news agency Novosti Press, who's calling in from Moscow tonight. And we look forward to many of our Night Call listeners calling in. Mr. Beglov?
Speaking.
Just prior to our break, we had to be interrupted to do a station identification, but you stated that the question was whether or not Mr. Nixon will affect a new, as opposed to an old policy. May I ask this, sir? What would the Russian people like to see Mr. Nixon do in this area?
Well, it's difficult to answer a question posed in such a term. What we would like Mr. Nixon to do. As I said, well, there are certain objective demands of the time which we Russian people think are pressing on the politicians. So the first is the recognition of the real facts of life, the respect of to other social systems. The attitude to the Vietnam problem, Middle East crisis, and the socialist community will be a touchstone. For example, people here ask, will this victory be assessed as the mandate to continuing or to canceling the recent decision concerning the turn towards a peaceful settlement of the Vietnam conflict, which took the form of the Washington order to discontinue the bombing of North Vietnam and the agreement to broaden the basis of talks. The major problem is, of course, to find best conditions for peaceful coexistence recognizing the fact that besides the American way of life, Western of life, there is also socialist community and new developing countries and the national liberation movement. Recognition of those facts means finding a proper formula which gives each system to develop and to compete with each other without relying without applying force and finding proper basis for disarmament and the solution of other burning questions, like the one which we are facing in Europe, the solution of the problem of European security. Take, for example, the problem of disarmament. In its relations with the United States, the Soviet Union does not reject a single chance capable of strengthening the basis of future potential steps in this sphere of disarmament. While consenting to bilateral talks with the United States on a number of concrete questions of reducing offensive and defensive strategic arms, the Soviet Union at the same time put forward a broad program of urgent measures, implementation of which would make it possible to get down to the radical solution of the nuclear disarmament problem. And we think that there is a gap between the two conceptions which should be rectified by the American side. The American line, as I personally evaluate it, has always been to base any effort in this field on the conception of balance of terror, while our tendency is to of balance of disarmament measures. So, we would welcome any assistance on the American from the American side to depart from the old lines of balance of terror. When you just watch the scale of the number of rockets and all always are emphasizing the point of trying to leave your opponent behind in terms of number of rockets and so on. This, I think, is a hypnosis which prevents from a realistic approach to the disarmament problem. And that's why we hope that a new line will adopt it, which will provide for a more constructive basis for disarmament negotiations.
Mr. Beglov, we have a number of people who would like to talk to you, and just before we turn them over to you, I'd like to ask you a question that was raised when we first came on the air tonight by one of our listeners. Do the Russian people look more favorably upon Mr. Nixon as opposed to Mr. Humphrey?
Well, I think that I have already answered that question. Well, I said that we here are not inclined to mystify or to absolutize the role of personalities in politics. Well, we have been hearing very much about the change people's attempts to counterpose the old Nixon to the new Nixon. And if the dynamics of the development of the new Nixon coincides with the change in the mentality of the Americans in terms of their peace aspirations, there are possibilities for a dialogue between our countries.
All right, sir. We will take our first call from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mrs. Reservoir is hearing Night Call over WTMJ. Mrs. Reservoir?
Yes.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Your question.
Yes, I'd like to ask, is it Mr. Beglov?
Mr. Beglov, yes, ma'am.
Yes. I'd like to ask him, when Mr. Nixon traveled in the Soviet Union, I'm not sure just when this occurred, but he did travel as a private citizen. He was rather, according to the correspondent I was listening to tonight, he was rather disturbed because he wasn't afforded any interviews with any of the well-known leaders of today. And would this be indicative of the attitude that they would apply to Mr. Nixon now?
Mr. Beglov?
Yes?
Did you hear the question, sir?
No, please. I couldn't have followed.
I beg your pardon, sir?
No, I didn't follow the question.
Oh, the question was that when Mr. Nixon traveled to Russia as a private citizen, he was not given an opportunity to interview any of the officials of the government, and according to my listener, he was a bit disturbed about this. And she wanted to know whether the refusal to see Mr. Nixon or the refusal to grant him an interview, is this the indicative of the attitudes of the Russians today?
When was it?
What year are you speaking of, Mrs. Reservoir?
I couldn't tell you just exactly, Mr. Shields, because I just heard it this evening on the Washington Review, on our local TV, our local educational network. And they were viewing the election of the past week. And the point was brought up that Mr. Nixon was disturbed by this attitude on the part of Russian officials. Now, I couldn't tell you at what time this occurred. They didn't mention the time.
Well, perhaps I'll ask Mr. Beglov.
Yes.
Are you aware of any trip that Mr. Nixon took to Russia or made to Russia, and he was not given an opportunity to speak to any of the government officials?
No, personally, I don't know. The only prominent incident of that kind happened, I believe, sometime in 1959. When I think Mr. Nixon was given an opportunity to have an interview with all the leading people in Moscow. After that, I don't remember about any particular happening of that kind.
All right, Mrs. Reservoir, thank you for calling.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, our conversation, what the Soviet Union thinks about the American elections. And our guest calling in from Moscow tonight is Mr. Spartak Beglov of the Russian news agency, the Novosti Press. This time out to Jacksonville, Florida, Mr. Dukes is hearing Night Call over WRHC. Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Good morning, sir. Your question.
Yes, I would like to know whether the Russian people favored Mr. Humphrey's election or Mr. Nixon, which was more...
Well, Mr. Beglov, Mr. Beglov just answered that question, according to Mr. Beglov, it was not a matter of who was the person who won the election, but whether or not the person who won would affect a new policy.
Okay, I'd like to ask another one. Do he believe... is it taken in Russia as a... do they see any new changes in the new Nixon, so-called new Nixon?
Well, again, his answer to that question was that they have heard about the new Nixon and they will await to see.
Oh, they will await to
see. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
We have to wait for the first 100 days.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. This is Night Call in New York, and this time we'll break for just a moment for station identification, but just before we do have a special announcement for our Night Call audience. Because we did not get Mr. Beglov on the line until the last half hour, we will extend our program tonight for an additional half hour. And those stations which can accommodate us, we certainly would appreciate it and hope that you will stay with us. And those who do have to leave, we say thank you for being with us. But we will be on for an additional half hour until 1 o'clock this morning with Mr. Beglov calling in direct from Moscow. We'll return to Mr. Beglov right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Spartak Beglov in Moscow after station identification. tomorrow night on Night Call. This year, America's conscience was touched by the plight of the starving breakaway nation of Biafra, whose 9 million population has been steadily reduced by as many as 3,000 deaths a day, Africans who literally starve to death. But did you know that there are 10 million members of the most affluent society in the world, our own, who are also literally starving to death? And they are to be found in many sections of the United States. 1/4 of the 400,000 Mexican Americans in San Antonio eat less each day than is considered a bare subsistence level. Black American farm workers in Alabama's Hale County are even worse off. Navajo Indian babies around Tuba City, Arizona, have so little fat in their cheeks that they can't cry or even suck. Hunger USA with Robert Choate of the National Institute of Public Affairs, tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to political commentator Spartak Beglov of the Russian Novosti Press Agency in Moscow about Soviet reaction to the American elections. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to Night Call and to our guest, Mr. Spartak Beglov of the Russian news agency, Novosti Press. And this time we'll go out to Louisville, Kentucky. Mr. Goodlett is here in Night Call over WLRS-FM. Mr. Goodlett?
Speaking.
Good morning, sir.
Mr. Beglov, I'd like to know what is the possibility of the United States and the Soviet Union getting together on space exploration?
Mr. Beglov?
I think that we are already there in space together. But, of course, the best time for a real cooperation will come, as I believe, when we have many obstacles of political and arising from this of military nature, security nature removed from the scene. In other words, I think that the closeness of cooperation will increase with the progress of disarmament and with the progress of the establishment of the collective security system in Europe and other parts of the world.
Do you think this progressiveness will also increase with the difficulty of the shot tried, such as, say, trying to go to Jupiter, which would be much more difficult than trying to go to the moon?
Sorry, I didn't quite follow.
I'll make it a little slower, Mr. Goodlett.
Do you think that perhaps a larger shot, say, to Jupiter would be more possible with cooperation, say, one Russian and one American going together rather than to the moon, since it would take a bigger team effort?
Well, I do not follow the technical side of this experiment so closely, so I don't know exactly where do you stand and where do we stand in this, but I hope that in some time in the future, there will be a joint effort in this direction.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York. Our conversation with the Soviet Union thinks about the American elections, and this time we'll go out to Los Angeles, California. Mr. Haber is hearing Night Call over KOGO. Mr. Haber?
Yes.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Beglov?
The last part of the question I didn't hear.
Did the Russian people think that the elections was going to be as close as it was.
Yes, we have been provided with the fullest possible information by the press, information agencies, and all the data, all the poll predictions, and all the uncertainty of the outcome. Everything was with us as well with you. So I believe that when the final moment came, nobody was sure. Nobody was certain.
I was wondering about a lot of Americans were a little bit surprised that it was so close in the vote count.
Well, what Mr. Begloff is saying is that the Russian people were not surprised, really. They had followed the elections rather closely.
Right. Yes.
All right, sir?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Bye.
Mr. Begloff? Mr. Begloff?
Yes, speaking.
Was there a great deal of interest? Was there much interest on the Russian people's part concerning the election, or was it, was there indifference? Were the Russian people interested?
Yes, they were. And it was not just the actual fact of electing the president which had attracted their attention. I think from the very beginning of the pre-election campaign, starting in January with the first efforts of the president in the campaign to put forward their programs, with the first victory of the Senator Eugene McCarthy in New Hampshire, the attention of the Russian people towards the election, the course of the campaign, has been increasing, and particularly their attention towards the process of the development of the so-called new policies complex. In other words, every Russian has been trying to find out an answer to his question whether this time a really new American policy has been worked out, and whether this time the American public opinion, which is in favor of the new foreign policy, would get its influence implemented in the new, in the formulation of the final pre-election program of the candidates. That's the angle from which we have been following the election.
Thank you, sir. This time we'll go up to Albany, New York. Mr. Raines is hearing Night Call over WGY in Schenectady. Mr. Raines?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. Your question?
I'd like to ask Mr. Breglov, what did the Russian people think of Mr. Nixon's support of Israel in the Middle East and how they reacted to this?
Mr. Breglov?
Yes. Yeah. For us, the Middle East crisis is one of those touchstones by which the future policies, as well as the present policies, are being judged of any country. Well, you see, now we have a moment when in the United Nations and outside it, there is a great effort exerted in the interest of speedy, peaceful settlement of that problem, when the Arab states themselves declare resolutely about their preparedness to join in searching for such a settlement on the basis of the well-known Security Council resolution. So I think that there has been some hopes here that the new administration would adopt a more, I would say, objective and fair position on this problem. But I think that all three candidates so far have been following previous line. And, I personally understand some signs of disappointment which are being shown on the part of the Arab states now, who are of the opinion that there is too much patronizing attitude on the part of the United States to one side without taking in due recognition, in due account, the interest and the position of the Arab side, of the Palestine people, and not enough effort to promote the fulfillment of the Security Council resolution on the withdrawal of the Israeli forces from the Arab countries.
Sir, can I ask one more question?
Yes, you may, sir.
Would Russia be willing to stop shipments of arms to Israel, or shipments to arms to Egypt, if the U.S. was willing to stop shipments of arms to Israel? Is he so willing, they're so willing to help, want to discuss this problem and get it resolved?
Mr. Beglov?
Yes. Please, I didn't quite follow the last part.
Would Russia be willing to stop its shipment of arms to the Middle East if America would also stop its shipment of arms?
I think that we should find an answer to this question in the context of the Soviet statement on this question. The Soviet side has always been asserted that it is much better that any support of armaments to the should be stopped. Any increase of material, inflaming material should be stopped. And this needs a clear recognition on the part of Israel and those Western countries who supported the terms of the resolution of the Security Council. If there is such recognition, then the Arab countries will be sure of themselves, of the perspectives of a real peaceful settlement. If there is not, then the whole situation is open to all sorts of moves on the part of any country which may be inflaming the situation there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. Before we take our next break, here's an announcement once again for the night call stations who are part of our network. Because we were unable to get Mr. Beglov on the line until the last half hour, we will extend our program tonight for an additional half hour. So those stations which can accommodate us, we will appreciate it. And those who have to leave, we say thank you so much for being with us. And we will continue with more conversation with our guest tonight, calling in direct from Moscow, Mr. Spartak Beglov of the Russian news agency, Novosti. This is Del Shields in New York. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Spartak Beglov in Moscow after station identification. In our city and our state and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble in our nation. Black and white trouble. Some people speak of racial tension. Some say poverty is the real problem. Some say law and order is giving away to anarchy in our streets. About the only thing on which most people agree is that there is a crisis and that we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes that you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from some people who should know what they're talking about. And so we bring you Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show where the public asks their questions and expresses their opinions to guest experts like Julian Bond, John Lindsay, Roy Innes, Joan Baez, and Godfrey Cambridge. Night Call, the nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Each weeknight on this station. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to political commentator Spartak Beglov of the Russian Novosti Press Agency in Moscow about Soviet reaction to the American elections. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And once again, tonight we return to our conversation. And this is kind of a brand new half hour as we have extended our time tonight. In view of the fact that we have our guest calling in from Moscow tonight, Mr. Spartak Beglov of the Russian news agency Novosti Press. And our telephone numbers remain the same as we continue. We will be with you for another 30 minutes, and this time out to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Mr. Leventhal is hearing Night Call over WPBC-FM. Mr. Leventhal?
Yes, good evening, Mr. Shields.
Good evening, sir.
I had several questions I wanted to ask Mr. Beglov.
All right, sir, one at a time and slowly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Beglov, former Premier Nikita Khrushchev appeared on a U.S. TV show with some film that was filmed in his place of retirement during his conversation before the television cameras. He claimed that the Soviet Union was able to influence the U.S. election of 1960 so that John F. Kennedy was the winner. He stated that the main method in which the Soviet Union was able to exercise such influence was had to do with captivity of Francis Gary Powers, who was the U-2 pilot who was shot down, and several other prisoners, which at the time Richard Nixon and President Eisenhower were trying to get released. He felt that the fact that they were not released deprived Richard Nixon at that time of a campaign boost, and thus he feels that this was perhaps the decisive margin in what was a very close campaign. My question is whether this year the Soviet Union has in any way been able to influence the U.S. elections, and if so, if it attempted to do so.
Mr. Beglov?
I don't think that the influence of any other country on the elections in this or that particular country could be exhausted in a direct way. We here do not subscribe to that point of view. Of course, there is a Soviet foreign policy. There are Soviet-American relations. In the context of this factor, the attitude of the Soviet Union to certain political issues has been explained. How has it been accepted, and what influence the general Soviet attitude to certain political problems of our time has been exerting on the positions of the people, of the electors? This is another question, but I think this is an indirect influence. Of course, everything which is happening between our two countries, the two major powers of the world, is very important to every man and woman in the world, and to every man and woman in the United States. But we can speak about our influence on the outcome of the election only in those terms, not in a direct term, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you for
excuse me?
You have another question, sir?
Oh, yes, I did.
All right.
I wanted to ask concerning summit conferences, what Mr. Bigelow felt, concerning the summit conferences, where in what areas they might be effective, and whether he would favor setting these up on a periodic basis.
Mr. Bigelow?
Sorry, I didn't follow.
Are you in favor of a summit conference, and would you suggest setting up these conferences on a more frequent basis?
Well, you see, the conferences imply the participation of certain individuals. So the question should be put forward to those individuals who are expected to be a party to such a conference. From the point of view of the interest of a wider public, of course, we in the Soviet Union included, would welcome any effort on the part of the leaders of the countries, important countries of all areas, to come to get together and to discuss certain important problems. For example, now there is a proposal on the part of the Soviet Union to have such meeting of head of government, of the heads of government of all European countries to discuss the problem of the European security. So the method itself is not excluded, and if there is a favorable situation, if these certain questions and problems are thoroughly started and the ground is paid for their constructive discussion and settlement, then of course everyone would be in favor of such a meeting.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bigelow.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York, and our conversation with our guest tonight, Mr. Spartak Bigelow of the Russian news agency, Novosti Press, has been extended to 1 o'clock tonight, and this time we'll go out to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. Smallover is hearing Night Call over WAMO-FM. Mr. Smallover? Mr. Smallover? I'm sorry, Mr. Smallover is not with us. All right, we'll go out to Austin, Texas. Mr. McCaskill is hearing Night Call over KUT-FM. Mr. McCaskill?
Yes.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to ask a question.
Thank you for calling, sir.
I would like to ask, among the more prominent Russian officials, and especially the Russian people, what was their reaction to the violence surrounding the Democratic National Convention in Chicago?
All right, Mr. Bigelow?
Well, our press reported more or less in detailed manner what had been happening in the United States, not only in connection with the Democratic Convention in Chicago, but in relation to all other incidents of violence connected with the race problem, with the peace movement, with the support given by many people to the candidates of the liberal side. So, well, we think that this kind of incident did not help the Democratic candidate, and the whole thing, of course, was not appearing or helping to form a favorable image of America of nowadays.
Mr. Bigelow, throughout the world, there seems to be a movement among students to demonstrate. And in Czechoslovakia, the students are demonstrating, as some of the students did in Chicago. Do you see any worldwide relationship in that students throughout the world are beginning to demonstrate on this basis?
Of course, there is, I don't think it's correct to say that some one single cause is uniting those movements. In different countries and cities, there may be different causes. You remember what happened in France in the spring? That may have been the most outstanding example of the dissatisfaction on the part of the young people with the system of education, with the mode of education, with the outlets which are given to them by the authorities in the universities, and by the outlets which they get when they come out of the higher educational establishment. So very much depends what are the conditions provided by the society to the young people, to the students in particular, in order to for them to find their proper place in life, in order to get good opportunities to utilize their brains and efforts in a productive sphere. That's why I think this should be taken as the main clue to the movements in different parts of the world.
Mr. McCaskill, did you have another question?
No, sir, but thank you very much for allowing me to ask.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Good night.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our conversation during this expanded half hour, what the Soviet Union thinks about the elections here in America, and our guest tonight calling in direct from Moscow is a political commentator, Mr. Spartak Beglov of the Russian news agency Novosti Press. This time we'll go out to Pittsburgh again, and I think Mr. Smallover is back with us. He's calling in from WAMO-FM. Mr. Smallover?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir, and forgive us for not...
Good morning.
Making contact right away.
Good morning, Mr. Beglov. Can you hear me?
Yes, he can hear you, sir.
Yes. I'd like to ask a couple of questions, short ones. First, how do you, as a Russian, and particularly as a Russian journalist, justify the massive military intervention of the Soviet Union in the internal affairs of Egypt, in that Russia is maintaining Nasser's military power and thus directly and actively supports Egypt's aggressive policy towards the recognition of Israel and the establishment of peace in the Middle East? Why is Russia actively antagonizing the dire situation in the Middle East?
Well, in this question, there are some, I would say, points which could be disputed. And the first question, or the first point, concerns the fact. I do not have in my possession any facts showing the so-called massive Russian military intervention in Egypt and in Egyptian affairs. The Egyptian side, as well as some other Arab countries which were involved in the Middle crisis, asked for the help of the Soviet Union, or for the help of the, for other countries who are in sympathy with their case. But this kind of assistance is being accorded on a strictly bilateral basis of in terms of, you say, instructors or materials and so on, but the sovereignty of the Egyptian side in this case is full and is in no way encroached or impaired. And the other point, which is very disputable, and this is the point about the Soviet attitude to the whole Middle East crisis. We do not promote the conflict. We have not been doing anything to, say, to encourage Israel to attack Egypt and other Arab states. So the whole conflict had arisen from the fact that the Arab states were attacked. So the question is now how to liquidate the consequences of that situation. And the main problem is how to get occupied Arab territories being freed from the occupation in order to provide the basis for the settlement when people discuss the problem, not to settle it with the help of arms. And if there is such a situation, with this aim the Soviet Union is trying to get the full support for the Security Council resolution of November 22nd in the United Nations, if such a situation is achieved, the recognition of the resolution is there, then the problems, including the problem of the recognition of Israel, would be easily solved and settled with the help of the Soviet Union included. But the proper conditions should be created, and that's why we always expect the United States to change their attitude and to adopt a more helpful attitude towards the solution of the problem, to come and meet the Arab proposals, to come forward and to meet and to help to promote the proposal of the Arab side about the so-called phased program of settlement of the Middle East crisis, and other proposals in this direction. Thank you.
Despite what you've just said, I think it's a moot point that the entire world is the witness to the Soviet intervention, in that the Soviet Union has taken upon itself the role of sole support to a militarist regime in Egypt, which is dedicated not only to war, an aggressive war, but that is dedicated to wiping out a sovereign nation. Now, I don't want to discuss this. As you said, it is a very disputable issue.
We differ too much on this question.
I have another question, if you will answer me. I would like to know your opinion as a journalist on the de facto anti-Semitism of the Russian government within the Soviet Union. It is a well-known fact throughout the world that the Russian government has been engaged for some time, well, throughout the entire history of Russian nation, but particularly under communism, in a rabid form of cultural anti-Semitism, the manifestations of which have been the state of affairs which exist today. There are no Jewish publications in the Soviet Union, and there are publications of other ethnic minorities and other nationalist groups within the Soviet Union. There are no autonomous religious schools for the Jewish people of the Soviet Union, the Jewish Soviet citizens, as there are autonomous schools for other ethnic and minority groups within the Soviet Union. Why has there not been one synagogue built since 1917 in the Soviet Union? Why are the Jews in the Soviet Union subject to such anti-Semitism?
First of all, there is no artificial line, as is implied in your question, of anti-Semitism in the Soviet public attitudes to Jews or to people of Jewish origin. They are citizens which are respected in and have the same rights as any other citizens of the Soviet Union. You are speaking about the cultural discrimination. Well, I would describe it as a reverse cultural discrimination. I do not think any other national minority or any people of any other national origin are playing so prominent part in Soviet cultural and scientific life, in the life of arts and the development of arts and so on. So there is a problem which I understand you are implying, the problem of religious minorities. Well, the religion is divided, separated from state in the Soviet Union, and the religious communities run their affairs on their own. The Jewish people, in their majority, I have in mind the Jewish people in the Soviet Union, in their absolute majority, they are non-religious, and they ascribe to the principles and the aims of the socialist society in our country, and this is where they have found the outlet, proper outlet for their spiritual and cultural activities. As far as the religious minorities are concerned, well, any religious minority in the Soviet Union may have its difficulties because they are not supported by the state. This is official status of and the constitution of the Soviet Union, and in this field, I don't see any particular discrimination. Any religious group exists in the Soviet Union, runs its own affairs, but if there are problems within the limits of their own community, well, there are their difficulties, and I think this issue is being inflamed and particularly selected by people from outside the Soviet Union in order just not to promote the cause of good relations with the Soviet Union, but just to hamper it, to prevent from the better development of the such relations.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much for letting me talk.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and our conversation tonight with the Soviet Union thinks about the American elections, and our guest calling in direct from Moscow is a political commentator, Mr. Spartak Beglov of the Russian news agency, the Novosti Press. This time out to New Orleans, Mr. Ambrosi is hearing Night Call over WDSU-FM. Mr. Ambrosi?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you, Mr. Shields.
Thank you, sir.
The question I have for Mr. Berghoff is that we know that Mr. Nixon has agreed to accept all major parts of President Johnson's plan to end the war in Vietnam. Will the Russian government intervene and put some certain pressure on Vietnam to further these peace talks and to have peace in Vietnam?
We lost the middle of your question, sir. Mr. Beglov?
Yes, sir.
First, before you answer, there was a report that at the bombing halt called by Mr. Johnson, there was a report that the Russian government had intervened and had used its influence in bringing the Vietnams to the point of accepting the bombing halt. First, I'd like to ask your reaction to that, and then the reaction to Mr. Ambrosi's question.
The Soviet Union's attitude to the Vietnam War was mainly and has always been influenced by the fact that its fraternal ally, the socialist country of North Vietnam, has been attacked. So our first reaction and the main attitude was to give any possible assistance to the North Vietnamese side. This is a question of our principle of international duty. At the same time, we have always been following the line that this war should be terminated as soon as possible, because many prominent problems of the present time has been overshadowed by this war, and the solution of many problems has been prevented from by this war. That's why we have been trying to exert our influence on the United States in this direction, and we have always indicated to the United States that if there is any real sign, any proof that they are prepared to start negotiations, our policy, our steps would be immediately directed in helping the beginning of the negotiation. The Soviet public welcomed Washington's decision on cessation of American bombing of North Vietnam, as well as the decision and the agreement on the broadening of the basis of the peace talks in Paris. Of course, people here are aware of the prevailing domestic political factors in the United States which made this decision finally possible. But at the same time, a full tribute is paid here to the decisive role of such factors as the brave resistance of the North Vietnamese people and the support rendered to them by the Soviet Union.
Mr. Beglov?
Yes.
And Mr. Ambrosi. Mr. Ambrosi, first, we thank you so much. The time has run out on us. Thank you. Mr. Beglov, we want to thank you for being our guest tonight on Night Call. Thank you so very much, sir.
Great pleasure.
This is Del Shields in New York. Our guest tonight, Mr. Sparktalk Beglov, calling in from Russia. We thank Mr. Beglov, and we also extend our appreciation to the Night Call stations who stay with us for the additional half hour. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Hunger USA with Robert Choate of the National Institute of Public Affairs. Listen tomorrow night, discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinion. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.